You are listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, episode 299, where the Uber CEO steps down and Microsoft's Xbox steps up.
Season 7, episode 299 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June the 18th, 2017. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and toughing his way through the muds of Canada is my brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, that's right. We're hanging out in, where are we? Whistler, Canada.
Whistler.
Yeah. Pretty cool. We did a tough mudder. We ran about 12 miles. Not the 10 that they said we would. And then...
It's tough.
we went over 20 obstacles.
Under a couple, but...
Under a couple as well.
You're supposed to on those ones.
Yeah.
Got a little bit wet, cold.
Oh my gosh, I was so cold. At one point, my arms were like shaking uncontrollably. I was so cold. And there's this one that's particularly bad. The name of it is Arctic Enema. And I think it's just like, it's a classic of theirs, and they get it, where you literally, you climb up a little ladder, and I mean, you're 6 feet off the ground, you know, you're not that high, and then there's like a short black pipe that you then slide down, so it's like a slide, and again, short, it's probably at a 45 degree angle, again, it's probably like 6 feet, like we're not talking like, this isn't a height thing, okay, that's what I'm trying to get at.
It's not scary, it just is enough to give you enough.
And then you slide down into this tank, which is probably, I don't know, 5 feet wide, 10 feet long, and maybe 4 feet deep.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe 3.5 feet deep.
It would be an uncomfortably small swimming pool if it were a nice summer day.
And then so what you do is you slide down into this water, and then they've got like around the middle of it, maybe it's 6 feet, and then there's 4 feet on the other side. They have a wall that you then, that only goes down maybe a foot or so. I don't even know because the water's, I didn't open my eyes. But you then go underneath the, that little wall, pop out the other side, pop out of the tank, you're done. Not a big deal, except for the fact that it's essentially an ice bath.
Yeah.
It's filled with ice and it's miserable. And I got out and instantly had a huge headache and slight blackout. It was like a straight up brain freeze.
From what I understand, they put in a non-toxic chemical antifreeze that actually lowers the melting point of ice and actually causes it to plummet to an even colder temperature than just an ice bath, which is particularly mean when you're... when you're on a cold winter's day in Canada, I guess.
And this is around mile 8-ish that this happens. And so you've already been going. It took us about 4 hours. So we were already like 3 hours into this thing when that happens. But then there's other ones which are super fun where, like, I know the one that you like is, they call it the Berlin Wall, where it's a 10-foot wall. Get over it.
Yeah.
You know? And... there is one little like piece of wood that like a 2x4 that they nail into the side of it about 2 feet up. And so that kind of, that helps you, but like it's difficult and you can do it on your own. But like you gotta be an athlete in order to do that. And, I would say most people who participate in this, they're not like, I wouldn't put them in the athlete category.
Yeah.
And so a cool feature is it's very much a team effort, which, like, on that one, for example, that was one that we knew we could get over. But there were some other people who were following us who they were just kind of like, what do I do? And, you know, we were able to literally lend them a shoulder to stand on and help them.
Keep them a hand under their foot as we pushed them up.
Yeah. So it was a ton of fun. It was good.
Yeah.
Got a shirt out of the deal. So that's always a... And a headband. That's also their thing.
Yeah.
I decidedly... low tech environment.
Yeah, I definitely. Say. I saw one drone at the very beginning, but it never resurfaced. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, like, for some of this stuff, and I just didn't, I wasn't paying super close attention. Like, do they have videographers and people around watching these things so that they can go back later and play the tape and figure out, like, where do people struggle? Where do they, you know what I mean? Just trying to get some feedback, or are they just walking around and kind of observing? And I don't know.
I think that's more the case. They just got people walking around. They got a bunch of volunteers at each of the stations, and they kind of evaluate them based off of that information. They get feedback from, you'll get pestered with survey information for the next.
No, I will not, because I'm going to unsubscribe now. Talk about low tech. They're the worst. So I signed up.
Yeah.
And then they were like, sweet, you signed up for the full meal deal. We're going to email you regularly about everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not into that. So I go to unsubscribe.
Yeah.
Because they're telling me about, like, sign up for every single race that we offer.
Yeah.
Regularly. Every single week. Look out. Prices are rising. You're like, come on. I'm already signed up. I'm in. So I go to unsubscribe, and it pops me up to this sign that says, just so you know, if you unsubscribe, you're unsubscribing from everything, including race day information when that becomes available in, like, 6 months. I just, like, are you kidding me?
I'm like a boiled frog in this case, because when I first signed up 6 years ago, it wasn't like that. So I've just, as the concoction of their emails have increased over the years,
I don't even notice. Well, I also ran into this problem where at one point in time they gave away a training thing.
Yeah.
But it was a classic lead generation tool where it was like, give us your email and we'll give you the training thing.
Right.
I get two.
Yeah.
I get two emails. It's the same email address.
Yeah.
I can't unsubscribe, and I get two stinking emails from them every single time. I'm just like, what the heck?
Yeah. Yeah, come on.
Because I was like, I want to do this, and I make sure, I'm smart. I make sure to give them my email address that I've already given, hoping that their system figures it out.
I'll say this. I've already gotten the email for giving them a feedback. We should tag team this.
This should be my feedback.
And all of our friends of, hey, how about y'all improve your email correspondence? I like getting emails. For, at a certain rate, you are way above that. You're driving me crazy. And I think for me, I don't
care about races in the Midwest.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry. Like, I know there's one in Seattle in September. Fine. Tell me about that one. Like,
yeah. Localize it to me.
Pick a radius.
That's okay. But,
or better yet, just figure out a way to differentiate marketing emails from transactional, need this information.
I feel like they're doing that on purpose, though. That's what drives me crazy, is it's the they do know.
Well, I don't know, because I know they also said they did apologize. And were like, we're working on it.
That did they?
That's what they said. So I'm like, okay. Well, whatever.
I know that their website is like a crazy animated web applet that loads crazy slow, even on a fast internet connection. So they're not the tip of the spear when it comes to...
Yeah, they're definitely low tech, for sure.
Tech savviness. But,
yeah, but it was good to have a low tech weekend. But I had my high tech watch with me, so I made up for it.
Yes.
So I knew our pace, I knew how long we were running, I knew our distance, I knew our elevation, I knew it all. So it was all good.
See, I didn't have my watch with me, so nothing counted. It was a complete wash of a weekend. All I did was eat a lot of food afterwards.
I hit 360% on my move goal. That's pretty good. So that was good.
But, yeah, man. Well, as much as that, consumed my week, there was stuff that happened in tech. So, I think...
Let's talk about it.
This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I work for and founded HP. However, I do not represent them or any of their opinions. I also am part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club.
Nice. If you want to get more information about us, check out our photos, look at our tweeters, whatever. You can do that. And I'll post photos to Insta of our Tough Mudder Weekend later. You can check that out at NextWiggin4 is my Instagram. At Matthew D. Furlow is my Twitter account.
James Furlow on Twitter, the web, everywhere.
Nice. And if you want to get more information about the stuff we talk about this week, we link all of these articles and stuff, all the videos, anything. We're going to talk about, like, it's E3 this week, so they'll have gameplay videos and stuff. If you want to check that out, you can find the links at furloughbros.com. And, yeah, be pretty good. Check it out.
Yeah, so E3 was, it's confusing. It was like last weekend / last week, yeah. Or I don't get there.
Well, they get like data links. They are not very good. Or how do I want to say this? It's one of those things where it's a classic example of everybody wants to be the first one to get their information out. And so every year, everybody pushes it to a more ridiculous. It's like it used to be Monday.
It's like
a
Christmas.
Exactly. It used to be Monday was like the spot. If you got the Monday like time slot, you were the biggest deal. Or you had to be the biggest deal to get Monday. So somebody said, well, we want Sunday. And they gave them Sunday. So somebody went, well, we want Saturday. So they gave them Saturday. And
yeah,
now,
it's weird. It's kind of like, why? Yeah, they just need some discipline.
Yes.
To say, the conference goes from Monday to Wednesday. Like, pick a slot.
Yeah. It just, especially because it feels like everybody sort of dies in the cacophony of Monday morning reporting. Like, you ignore... Most people ignore that. Well, I don't know. I'm not a gamer. Maybe gamers are just... They're so insatiable and for information.
Maybe it's always started on the weekend. And I just... We just missed that. I don't know. It's weird. You get that sense of like... Or they even make it worse where it's like... You get all these companies. They'll do all their press releases ahead of time. It's that idea of like... We want to get ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
There's just... It feels like it's desperation.
It's the Black Friday thing of... You know, it used to be Black Friday was ridiculous, and then people started opening up their stores earlier and earlier, and then finally somebody said, well, we're going to open it up at midnight on Thanksgiving, and then somebody said, we're going to open up at 10 o'clock on Thanksgiving, and then all of a sudden somebody said, we're going to open it up all day on Thanksgiving, and then it was just off to the races. You're like, well, so all of a sudden Black Friday starts on the Monday before Thanksgiving, and it doesn't even mean anything anymore. It's just the holiday season shopping.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it feels like. Especially when you get some companies, who we'll talk about in a little bit, who they come in and they don't even make new announcements. They just give updates on old projects.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is this even? Like, why are we here? But that's okay.
That's what I just... There's other conferences where I appreciate it, where... Now, granted, like... And I'm not talking about, like, Google I.O. or WWDC for Apple, because, I mean, literally, like, they're in control of it all, and they decide when to start, and that's when it starts. Right. And so, there's other conferences where,
CES
I don't know.
Pretty good about, like...
Yeah, they're okay.
The day it starts is the day it starts. And
yeah, they also don't have, like, a big keynote thing.
Yeah, that
like,
helps.
They have workshops, and there will be companies that make announcements, but it's more of a... No, set up your booth, and then we're going to let people in.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, E3 has a very different, like, there's a floor, but then it's, like, each of the events are in their own different venues.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, it's weird.
Well, even the other gaming conferences do a better job of discipline in this area. I think it's just, it seems E3 is particularly bad about just, people start doing press releases a week beforehand, their schedule of keynotes is just completely crazy and inconsistent. Then you've got this like long tail of reporting as people go onto the floor and find small games all the way throughout the week. And it's just hard to nail down like, so when should we do the E3 week?
Yeah. So we're doing it this week.
Yes.
But before we get to it, we're going to do our own update.
Yes.
We didn't color code anything.
No, that's right.
On our recently favorite company,
yes,
to beat up since Palm and BlackBerry are no longer around.
And Snapchat's doing better than I want.
By what measure?
Well,
their price dropped this week dramatically.
They
are back to their IPO price.
Oh.
And and it's because investors are all concerned of like, how are you going to grow and make money?
Yeah.
So I know they released their ad manager to let anybody create an ad now. which is going to be interesting. A whole lot more garbage on the site, but not that there wasn't beforehand. I was going through just before this trip. I don't know why. It was super random. I was like, you know, it'd be nice to clean up some apps on my phone. And so I deleted, you know, like 5 or 6 apps. Not a lot, but a couple. And Snapchat was one where I thought long and hard. I was like, dude, I could just get rid of this. And I wouldn't care. I honestly literally have not opened the app.
But you haven't even signed in. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, since I got my new phone. Haven't opened it. Haven't signed. I could get rid of it, and it would be totally okay. I should do it. I'm doing it right now.
Oh, man, this is exciting.
I'm doing it right now. Snapchat this is dead to me.
We're trying to beat up Uber, but we're going to beat up Snapchat for a little while. You know, it's...
Boom, done. It's look over. At this. By the way, in case... So you can describe this to people. So I have a folder.
Social folder, yes.
I have 10 apps in it, and the way Apple works is you can have 9 on one page.
Yes.
And... where is Snapchat?
It is the 10th one on the second page. It's invisible, basically. Yeah.
So, now it's really invisible. Gone.
It's awesome. It's exciting.
Snapchat's dead to me.
It's funny because last week when we talked about Apple's new AR platform, we talked about how it will affect Facebook on the principle that Facebook's already beaten Snapchat so far down with that platform that it didn't even bother to bring it up. And yet... they've got to be feeling the hurt of like, wait a second, that was our cool feature. And Apple just made it easy for every competitor under the sun to come in with something similar.
So anyways, we're not here to beat up on Snapchat. Yeah, right? We're here to beat up on Uber, who they had a week. I'm trying to figure... I almost made a comparison of a controversial week of Uber versus a controversial week of our commander-in-chief.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I just thought that all of a sudden. It's like, man, I wonder if he's had more problems lately.
Oh, you say? I feel like...
I think his is all talk. Theirs are, like, genuine problems. But...
all right, anyways. Even you saying that.
We're going to stop the comparison
Let's have fun here, James. Travis.
Sorry.
I don't know. Do you want to start with the... I think the big one, the important one, we'll start with is Travis Kalanick, the CEO of Uber. He has officially, temporarily stepped down.
Well, he's taken a leave of absence because he's immature and decided to blame it on personal stuff.
Yep.
Instead of the business. So he wrote an email saying, hey, guys... I mean, it's terribly sad that his mom died in a boating accident. Apparently, his dad is still in critical condition or something. Yeah. And so he's like this happened like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And he's like, you know what? I'm emotionally messed up because my mom died, which again, like I would be too. So that's legitimate.
Yeah.
But zero recognition that like, oh yeah, I'm putting my company into a tailspin and I need to I'm stepping down because of this Eric Holder report. It was like the classic, which I loved about, what was his name? Mason. He was the CEO of Groupon. When he stepped down, he was like, well, everybody, you know, it's time to take a rest and do some new things and improve on my fishing. And, you know, I'm just tired of the life. He goes, I'm just kidding. I was fired today. Yeah. You know, but making fun of all those people who that's what they write.
Yeah.
And, well, and that's what he wrote.
I mean, it's the classic. I mean, it's so cliche. It's cliche to be cliche. I'm stepping down to spend more time with my family. And that's exactly what he wrote. and it's the temporary. My big question is, is it going to be temporary?
Here's the deal. So here's how I understand it. So from a stock owning standpoint, there's 3 people that matter in Uber.
Okay.
He's one of them, and then he's got like 2 friends. And the reason why they matter is even though they own a minority stake in the company, their shares are worth 10 votes each.
Oh, okay.
So he and these 2 guys, they own a major majority of the voting shares.
Okay.
And so as a result, essentially, they're like, you can't get rid of him. They're like, under any normal company circumstance, like, the CEO would have been fired by now.
Right.
Like, and everyone seems to agree, like, this is the things that he's doing. It's not that it's, I mean, there's a few things that are, like, morally and questionably, you know, business conduct questionable things.
Yeah.
But it's like, he's just not running the company well, period.
Right, yeah. You know?
And so, like, they should get rid of him. And any normal board who is doing their job, that's what they would do. They go, but in this situation, he literally has all the power. They couldn't fire him if they didn't want to, because he would just say, oh, we're having a vote next shareholder meeting on whether or not I should still be CEO. And, oh, look, I voted for me to still be CEO.
Right.
Nice try. Gotcha, suckers. And so they're like, as long as these two other guys who appear to still be very loyal to him go with him, like, he's not going anywhere. They, right. You cannot get rid of him because he doesn't want to gotten rid of. And so a lot of the analysis, they're like, this is actually not, how did they say it? Like, it's not worst case scenario, but it should be compared to the worst case scenario instead of best case scenario, him doing a leave of absence.
Okay.
So, like, for example, I'm trying to think, like, let's say, okay, so you've got a job.
Yes, I do. Thank goodness.
Or, what's a better way to say this? Okay. So you got your job. Let's say that your boss decides that he's going to take a vacation.
Okay.
Okay. An undisclosed amount of time, but you're pretty sure it's at least a month.
Okay, yeah.
But it could be longer.
Right.
And he goes, Matthew, I want to put you in charge of the shop while I'm gone.
Okay.
Like, are you going to hire or fire anybody?
No.
Are you going to dramatically change the direction of the company?
No.
Are you going to strike new deals with big suppliers?
No. Right.
You're going to keep on keeping on, like an interim should.
Yeah.
And you're just going to make sure that the direction that was previously set stays set. What if, let's just say in this situation, your boss was like, no, Matthew, like, you're full charge. Like, do what you think needs to be done. And when I come back, I'll pick up where you left.
Right.
Would you...
Yeah.
Do anything dramatic?
No.
Outside of the obvious.
No. And I think
and that's the problem.
I say, and I think I have, I definitely have.
Especially, by the way, know that your boss is a self-absorbed.
Yeah.
Vindictive.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I don't even need to think about it that way. I just need to think about it as my boss and Travis share this in common. My boss owns the company that I work for. And this has been his company. This is the thing that he's built. This is his thing. It is his retirement plan. It is the effort he's put into most of his life. It's his brand. It's literally named after him. You know, and so even if you didn't include the other characteristics of Travis Kalanick, you'd still get the whole, if I changed things too much and went in a bad direction without, like, previous permission, my boss would freak out as soon as I got back and probably fire me right away.
Well, let's be clear here. Your boss isn't actually, like, taking a European vacation and is going to be off the grid.
Right.
Like, he's paying it. Like, he's not in the office, but he's reading everything.
Yeah, exactly.
He's paying attention. And the instant you do something and the article comes out, you could get a call and he could say, I'm coming back.
You know what's really funny about that? This is actually closely related. One of my coworkers happens to be my boss's son. And over the years, it's become very apparent that my boss actually wants his son to take over after him.
Okay.
And his son is multi-talented and is good at other stuff and has started building another business in a completely different category, so it won't happen. But one of the reasons why it wasn't going to happen anyways, and we had these conversations about the fact that if my boss stepped aside and, you know, quit, retired, and then my son or his son took over, he's like, it will just never be the case where his son will actually have control, because his boss will, or his dad will constantly be like, what are you doing? Why are you doing it this way? call every question to
every decision, every question.
Yeah, and we'll never actually quit. And just how that would be impossible to do, to deal with. And that's what Travis is doing with his company, is he's like, yeah, anybody who takes over is going to be in this impossible position, especially since it's not like he's taking a leave of absence from his voting rights. So if anything goes off the rails, he can just go, I'll just outvote you.
Well, and he still said, I will only be involved in the most strategic of strategic decisions. So it's not even a full step aside.
Yeah.
Which again, he owns the company, he owns the voting rights.
So all this is...
He has decided that's how he wants to structure it. Investors got on board with that. Like, dude,
I figured it out.
That's how that works.
I'm telling you what, I figured it out.
Okay.
He has got a team of PR people that are all sitting around him, and he's looking at this entire thing as a PR issue, period, point blank. There's nothing more to that. This is a PR issue. How do we fix the PR issue? And his PR people have very smartly said, we need to clean up a few things internally, but part of that process is having you get out of the spotlight. We need articles about you to go away. And so that's what he's doing. He's still controlling the company. He's still going to be influencing the CEO. He's just in a way that is giving him... And that's why you got the letter you got. Because he doesn't want to admit fault, because that would be bad from a PR perspective. Yeah. Whereas he just wants to disappear from the public spotlight long enough for this PR stuff to resolve. And I bet within a week of... I'll bet when you get no more uber bad news for like 3 weeks, he'll be back. Huh. And I think it'll just be... The whole thing will be, how can we just drag this story out, let it get quiet enough, and let people get bored of it. And then he'll come back after the ship had been corrected, even though nothing will have changed. They'll just do a bunch of PR stuff to try to make it so that they can, you know, obviously involved in that is doing a little bit of real work to actually fix systemic problems within the company. But more importantly, I think it's getting the message out that we're fixing it, and then Travis will come back.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you'd like to see it where what they didn't tell us was that he's going to go through some CEO coaching type of thing as well. And, you know, really have some work done.
Yeah.
In the off time. I also think it's interesting. They're clearly, they have huge issues and they're going to swing the pendulum in the other direction. Cause the other issue they're running into is like, you just can't, they're going to do a slow death because they can't attract and keep talent.
Right.
Because people are gonna be like, I'm not working for that. You know, top engineers are going to go somewhere else. Right.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's the other fear, is like, they're just going to miss out on opportunities cause they're not going to move as fast or be able to do it as well. That kind of stuff. So they've swung in the opposite direction. So like, you can't make this stuff up, but in the middle of the, they announced it to the internal employees, which Travis wasn't even there to do the announcement, which I thought was interesting. So it was the board members who were doing it. And Arianna Huffington was one of the ladies, and she was speaking. And
she's the only woman on their board right now.
Yeah, and she was talking about how we're going to add some more diversity, like more women. And in the middle of that, David Bonderman cuts her off in the middle of this meeting about company culture to say... yeah, it's much more likely we'll have a lot more talking now that we have more women on the board, which, okay, on one hand, like, okay, like, it's a funny, he was trying to add some levity to the situation.
Yeah.
I get it. Like, I get what he was trying to do. It was just like, oh, that was not the right moment.
Read the room, man.
Like, that was like,
yeah, we are in a PR disaster right now. We do not make jokes about the fact that, you know, like, there's a couple of things that your company is in trouble for, but the biggest PR issue you have right now is the sexism stuff.
Misogyny.
Like,
and
you have actual legal structural problems that are probably affecting your ability to do business bigger. Like the fact that, you know, you have legal issues in a whole bunch of different companies. You have people breaking laws in different companies, like high level executives doing stuff. Like, I get that maybe from your perspective, this isn't the biggest issue you face. But from a PR perspective, this is what all the news articles care about, is the fact that women employees are treated terribly at your company. So how about you not make jokes about it, man? and importantly, how about not tired old cliche jokes? If you're going to make a joke, be a little edgy.
Yeah, so that was not a smart move on his part.
Oh my gosh, I read that, I was just like, that is amazingly, like, just classic 60, 70-year-old rich dude. Like,
well, and honestly, like, in a different situation, not the worst joke ever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not funny, very cliche, like you said, but, like, in some ways, harmless, especially, like, depending on how you deliver it. Like, if you deliver it in such a way where everyone knows that you're joking and you realize that that's crazy.
I'm going to say, what's edgy about it and would be very funny in the proper circumstances would be, if you know what you're about to say is as horrible in this context, it's a relatively mild joke, but in this context, it's just horrible. And you say it anyways.
Yeah.
That is edgy and I think pretty funny. The problem is this guy clearly didn't understand that.
Yeah. So he did. And I thought this was interesting. I was a cool article where he was saying he honestly should be Travis's mentor. Like, hear him out.
Okay.
Like, what? He goes, because his reaction was, you're right. That was totally inappropriate. I quit.
Yep.
You know, he did the right step when it was time to do it. He made a mistake. I think, under normal situations, like, you don't quit. You just apologize.
Yeah.
You go, guys, I'm sorry. That was totally inappropriate.
Yeah.
But again, given the situation where they're at, where, like, that's all they've been doing, like, no, you need to be more extreme. And so he did the right thing of essentially saying,
well, yeah, and he
I resign, I'm
and
done.
And he even came out, and his reason for resigning was exactly that of, you know what, this is distracting, and you're right, this is part of the problem. I'm just, you know, part of it is, he doesn't need this. This isn't his.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this isn't, he's a rich dude who, he doesn't need Uber in order to continue to be rich.
Well, and this thing's going to go from them meeting every 6 to 12 weeks to them meeting every week.
Right.
It's going to take up a time. I mean, there's a part of me who's like, I think I just dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
I took a personal hit.
Yeah.
But he's also like, but I fell on the sword as fast as I could and people will appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think he made the right moves. And there's like, yeah, that should be Travis's mentor. Like,
yeah.
Here's what it looks like to make a mistake and recover from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, super interesting. So, we're going to keep watching Uber. Uh-huh. It's not looking good. I don't know. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, in the sense of, like, we'll keep with the metaphor. They're just going to keep spinning their wheels.
Yeah.
And,
well, I keep using it, so they're going to keep the app running as long as they're running the money.
They're like, you know, they've got that brand recognition. They have this hold on customers, and as easy as it is to maybe tap over to a Lyft, like, it's just people will use Uber. Like, they have two big problems right now. One of them is the race to automation, which they're clearly not doing very well at right now. But then it's the race against the balance sheet where they're losing money.
Yeah. Like,
they still got to solve those problems.
Say, Lyft. I don't know. Lyft, I think, is, they're pulling ahead. It's simply out of desperation, but their game plan is pretty good in that they're in this situation where they've partnered with heavyweights in the race to automation. Like, it's become very clear that Waymo's like, hey, when we get our stuff tacked, we want to partner. We don't want to build our own app, you know, ride hailing, app platform. Lyft will partner with you. Ford is in the, we're going to build autonomous cars. When we do, we're going to need to partner with a ride hailing app. We don't want to partner with Uber because they're not playing well with others. Lyft. And it's like, Lyft has tied together some strategic partnerships where it's like, at this point, if one of the three who are going as hard and fast as they can succeed, they'll end up partnering with Lyft. And Uber is going to be left in a position where, you know, they're better positioned than Lyft to own the entire stack of technology, but they're worse prepare, they're worse positioned than Lyft to be the first to the market. And if Lyft can all of a sudden say, we have autonomous drivers, there's more cars, there's more availability in more cities, and it's cheaper, that's then all of a sudden you become, their app becomes the first stop when you're handling a car, and Uber's in trouble. Because like you said, once you kind of get into that, who's your first click, you know, that's a pretty good position to be in. And I think, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. But let's move on to
let's do it.
The E3. So yeah, Microsoft. So you know, you get the big dogs come in every year. Microsoft, PlayStation, and Nintendo. E3, as much as it's a video game conference, it really revolves around the consoles. And Microsoft was the only one that announced new hardware this year. They
makes sense.
PlayStation or Sony did their PlayStation 4 Pro last year. Nintendo launched the Switch earlier this year. So Microsoft is...
So that's the way you do it if you want to get ahead of E3.
Yeah, exactly.
Do your own hardware event.
Yeah. Microsoft announced this year...
I don't know when Microsoft would have been able to do it, because they've been doing hardware events, it feels like every month.
Yeah. So, they're doing it back when... They're doing it the way that Apple used to do it.
Yeah,
where it was just relentless. New stuff! So they announced a new... The new hardware, we've known about it for a little bit. It's called used to be called the Scorpio, and it was going to be their 4K pro gamer platform.
Yeah.
They finally gave it an official name, and like so often happens, where they have a really good name for their code name, and then they turn it into a dumb name for their official launch. They went with the Xbox One X for the name of their platform.
So the Xbox 11?
Yeah, right. It's not spelt that way. It's the Xbox One. It's like the Xbox One with an X after it.
So the Xbox Onyx?
Right, yeah. It's it's so crazy. People immediately started jumping back to the X-Bone X.
Yeah.
There were Reddit threads that were nothing but people making fun of this name and coming up with different stuff. The naming convention kind of makes sense.
Does it represent a 10?
No. So this is the naming convention. They had the Xbox One. Then
they had an Xbox.
Right.
Then they had a 360.
Now they have the Xbox One. Then they had the Xbox One S, which is the slim version of the Xbox One.
Got it.
And so now this is the extreme version of the Xbox One. And so it's the Xbox One X. And
so does that mean in a year or two, we'll get a totally new Xbox?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. See, this is the funny part, is that somebody was pointing out the real issue that they're having is that it's sort of the Galaxy S issue, where PlayStation is already further ahead than them on the numbering system. So they can't just go straight numbers, because then they'll be competing with the PlayStations, and they're like, when do you get ahead?
Why don't they just go, look, we had an Xbox. We had an Xbox 360, which was the second one. We then had an Xbox One, which was the third one.
Yeah.
Why don't we just call this the Xbox 4? You know, just dramatically simplifying it. Xbox is fourth generation.
Well, and I...
Four.
I
Xbox
just,
4.
I won't... And I don't
keep
mind...
Keep it simple.
I don't mind them going with the... Keep it the
we'll
Xbox.
Just call it Xbox.
Yeah, or call... Yeah, exactly. Just
That's
call
what
it
they're
Xbox.
Doing with the Surface. They yes. figured that out. We're just calling it... This is just Surface. It's the 2017 generation.
Or call it Xbox Scorpio. There's no reason why you need the, like...
Yeah!
Give it a
that'd
cool,
be cool.
Give it, like, do like they do with cars. Give it a cool model name,
or like
you know?
What they're trying to do with, like, the... With what is it? The Mac thing where it's like... It's OS X. Sierra.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't care. Whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a name. Just have it... Yeah, the naming convention on
it's
it.
It's an Xbox. That's the important part. Xbox. Afterwards, name it whatever you want. Have fun with it.
Exactly. And just the latest
I
one.
Feel like that's super smart.
Yeah. I'm just trying to imagine kids telling their... Maybe parents are savvy enough nowadays that they'll be able to differentiate between an Xbox S and an Xbox One X. But I just feel like you're just asking for problems for when it comes to Christmas time.
They've always had. They just like they make their names so complicated. Now I go back and forth. So like HP, they for whatever reason, Bill and Dave thought it was cool to have a number in the name.
Okay.
And so for them, the policy was there will always be a number. And HP has continued on that tradition. Again, I kind of got a love-hate relationship with it. On one hand, you're like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, we've decided we'll always have some sort of number in the name. And
yeah.
So you do that. And there's times where you're like, you go, you don't, like, that's a lot of numbers. Like, there was a way to do this that made sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we have our, it's the HP all-in-one desk jet 11,502.8.
Right.
With an E7652 on the end. You're like, whoa, guys, relax. We don't have those many printers. Like, it's okay. And somehow we were like, we're going to start in the thousands. Because.
Well, it's like video games where you're like, why is the score always start at, like, every time you, the lowest enemy that you kill gets earns you 1,000 points. Just,
I mean,
there's
I kind of appreciate
there.
It because they want the, you had the value of the kill.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it. Believe me, I get it.
Yeah.
But I just, which is probably part of it. And I mean, I know at least HP with like with the printers, they said, well, this is a, it's the thousandth column, or it's actually, it's the hundredths. And we've had over 10 different models now. And then they play with certain features and stuff in the tens and ones digits. So I get the logic. It's a very engineering logic.
Yeah.
It's not a brand name logic. Why not? Just call it Xbox Scorpio. That feels like that would have worked. And just keep the... It's just Xbox.
Yeah.
I feel like that was... That's so brain-dead, simple, straightforward.
Yeah. Or just call it the Xbox 4K.
Okay, sure, whatever.
I mean, you know, just whatever. So, yeah, that's the big feature for people who are confused on why this matters at all, is they've... The Xbox...
Scorpio's better than 4K, but you know, whatever. I'll take either one of them.
The Xbox One S, the slim version, was equipped to do 4K streaming. So, like, 4K Amazon TV or Amazon 4K...
Dude, 4K is
Netflix.
Here. I love it.
But
3D is not 4K.
But that system couldn't do 4K gaming.
Oh.
PlayStation came out with the PlayStation Pro that could do some 4K gaming depending on availability from publishers.
Makes sense.
And they have a thing called oversampling where they can actually improve the quality of the graphics through, it's kind of hacking how your computer renders or how your TV actually turns on and off pixels. And you can increase the quality of the graphics using this technique called oversampling. It's capable of that, which will actually make 1080p games look better on a 1080 screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Microsoft came out and was just like, no, we want a system that improves all graphics across the board and doesn't need much support from publishers. So they went very over the top in building this really powerful machine that can do 4K graphics. And it's got all sorts of teraflops of processing power. And,
sure.
Very impressive. One of the interesting things that always happens with these consoles, this $500 console, but a lot of people are talking about how, you know, for like a $600 gaming PC, you can get way more processing power. And, you know, so why should I expect this to look better? Well, it's the classic, they're going to sell a million of these things. So developers now know that they have a target of a million of these consoles. Whereas how many people have 4K video games? How many have 4K video or computers? I mean, how many have 4K capable graphics cards? How many 4K capable graphics cards are there? It's just a way bigger target to focus on. Whereas with the Xbox, you can zone in on optimizing for that platform, which will give you better graphics and better whatever. And so, yeah, in the end, you end up with a very quality platform, and it's going to be the highest end one for sure. But it is more expensive than the PlayStation Pro. It still requires...
What's the PlayStation Pro at?
It's like $400. So this is like $100 more.
Oh.
And, you know, and they just...
That's meaningful. That's a game or two.
Yeah, exactly. And they, yeah, exactly. And they... The biggest thing that they're doing here is they're now supporting a lot of reverse compatibility for
that's
older
a big
games.
Deal. That killed
it's
them.
I mean, they seem to be learning a lot of lessons. This thing focuses... They didn't even mention 4K video playback on this, which is... You'd know it's capable of it, because why wouldn't it be? But they were like, no, we're focusing on gamers. This is a gaming platform.
Makes sense.
Which was a mistake they made with the original Xbox One that really hurt them. And
they thought they were making a play for the living room yet again.
Yeah. And they got damaged by it. The other thing that they're doing is they're really pushing cross-platform games.
Yeah, they did kind of try to go all in on.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that they saw what happened with Halo and they were like, man, it was only available on Xbox. That was the reason why we sold a bunch of consoles. Let's do more of those.
Right.
Like that was the logic. I get it.
But you can tell that.
But if you're number one, you can get away with it.
Yeah, and you can tell that Satya Nadella got involved in this whole thing because he's a look. The most important platform on all of Microsoft is our Azure suite. It is our servers. It's the competitor to AWS. This is the future of Microsoft. How about y'all support that? And so they've done a couple of things. Rocket League is a really big platform of theirs, and Minecraft is a huge platform. And they've now unified cross-platform play on...
Dude, that's so good, because it's super annoying. And honestly, I don't play Minecraft that much anymore, because I've had something going on my PC.
Yeah.
And then I had something totally different on my phone. And then I was like, oh, I like a little bigger screen played on my iPad. Oh, totally different again.
Yep.
I'm just like, well, that's dumb. I'm not starting over. I want my one world.
Right. And it's amazing how much of it is just political. It's hard to, I don't know. It's interesting. I've got to do some research because I don't actually know exactly why technologically this seems to have been such a big struggle to get it so that.
Because it's not like it's all just like you're installed on your device and 100% play.
Right,
it's all over the server anyways.
Exactly. So they finally have gone through, done the engineering challenges, negotiated with the companies, and now you can play.
I might start playing again.
Yeah, so now Diana, my girlfriend, can play on her Switch. She can play Minecraft. I can play it on my computer. You can play it on your Xbox or whatever, and we can all be playing together. The one thing you can't do, though, is I won't be able to play with you if I'm playing on my PlayStation. And that is because PlayStation is the dominant platform, and they don't want to make it easy for their...
Sasha's not an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. If they were the dominant ones, it would be completely different.
But so that is going to happen, or
that is already available for Rocket League and Minecraft. They like flip the switch.
So if I turn it on, I can. Okay, all right.
That's what they said. And then
I know what I'm doing later.
When Microsoft first talked about this sort of thing, Sony was like, "Yeah, we could support that totally. That sounds good. You bring it to the table, and we'll hook up our back into it." And now that it's here, they're like, "Nah." Oh, thanks, guys. That's really good of you. And the other interesting thing that Microsoft,
I know. I get it.
The other interesting thing that Microsoft
did... It's funny, though, Nintendo, which, I mean, Microsoft gets that, too. Like, dude, a ton of kids are going to buy it. That's the right demographic.
And Nintendo knows that one of the things that hurt them the worst is no third-party developers.
Totally.
And this is how you get Microsoft to develop tons of games. They've got really successful games. This is how you get them on board, is if you want Microsoft to support your platform, then... Give them the back end. Let them control the servers. Nintendo, who's notoriously bad at back ends, couldn't be more happy to have somebody else handle.
Please.
Yes, exactly. So that's a match made in heaven. I think that that's...
Well, I think they both agree that they're not competing against each other directly.
Right.
I mean, sure, in one lens they are, but nah, they're not.
Yeah, well, it's very much, you know,
they got different customer segments.
Yeah,
it's all good.
And you could see, it's very easy to imagine somebody getting an Xbox One Christmas and a Switch the next, or vice versa.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas it's really hard for me to justify getting an Xbox because I have a PlayStation.
Right.
Like, why would I do that? Like, I've already spent all this money on the One. And so, I can...
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting strategy that they're...
Do you think it'll work?
Yeah, what do you mean by work?
Do you think they're going to sell a lot more Xbox One X's? That's the worst name in the world. I'm sorry.
I know.
Any more X's? That's still bad. Any more of their new console? And is there a snowball's chance that they're going to overtake PlayStation? Maybe not in the aggregate, but at least in monthly sales.
No.
Okay. That would be no for success then.
Yeah, this is the difficult thing. Sony has two versions of the PlayStation right now.
Yeah.
They have the Pro 4K version, and then they have like a slim, cheaper version.
And you have one even older than that, right?
Yeah, I have the original. OG.
The original PlayStation 4.
Yes. And then Xbox has two platforms for sale. They have the Xbox One S, their slim version, the cheaper slim version. Then they have the Xbox One X, which is their pro gamer version.
Okay.
And so both companies have two products that kind of fit into the same categories of the light version and the pro version.
Do you just get the light version because you don't have as much money? Is that...
It's a lot cheaper. It's significantly cheaper.
Oh, okay.
Like the PlayStation Slim is like $250.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big price cut because it's all the internals of the original PlayStation 4, but it's been 4 or 5 years, and so they're just able to manufacture it way cheaper now because they're...
Okay.
And so it's Moore's Law is dropping the price on those.
Okay.
And the thing is, it's really funny because one of Microsoft's execs, Phil Spencer, he said that the PlayStation 4 completes with the Xbox One S, not the Xbox One X, which I'm like, I get why you'd say that. How could you not say that as a Microsoft exec? But you know that's stupid, right? That's not how most gamers are going to look at it. Because as far as they're concerned, if you're a pro gamer and you play, you know, like if you want super high quality graphics, you really have two choices and you're not going to, like, what are you talking about? But he's making the argument that the Xbox One X is such a superior graphics powerhouse that, you know, which it's, I guess it's kind of true, I guess. I mean, it is more powerful, but you're competing with the PlayStation 4 Pro. You understand that, right? Like, people are going to go to the store with $500 and think, do I buy an Xbox One X or do I buy a PlayStation 4 Pro and a game?
He knows it.
As a Microsoft exec who's, you know, where your platform costs more, how could you say anything different? But I love it when they say stupid stuff like that. We're like, you know better.
They need more, like, here we're going to tie in some other culture pieces here. They need to have more of the Steve Kerr attitude.
Yeah.
Who is the head coach of the current reign NBA champions Warriors. They won Monday, so we...
Yeah.
That's right. One of the things I appreciate about him is, like, he could be that coach who's like, we're the best in the world. Like, we will go in and dominate. I must break you.
Yeah.
You know, like, he could be that way. But what I loved was they were walking into game 5 after, after Warriors had lost. And they were interviewing Kerr and were like, so how do you stop LeBron James? And like, he could have given a very Microsofty type of answer. Yeah. You know, like, well, he's one man, and we got 5, and we're a team, and, you know, it's a totally different level of competition, whatever. He goes, yeah, he's pretty good, isn't he? I don't know. Do you have any ideas? Yeah. And it's just like, have some humility in this process, you know?
You would love Microsoft to come in and say, you know, we love supporting games on all platforms because all platforms have different advantages. Now, ours happens to be the most powerful gaming console that you can buy. If you want the very highest end of performance and you're a professional gamer, then this is where you go. That's what we offer. You know,
we're working on is trying to get other developers to to make games that only work on the Xbox One X.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you can so easily like turn, like, you don't need to make a statement that is patently false. And at the same time, especially because, you know, I get how, you know, I get the fact that you want to sell Xbox One X's, but your company's lifeblood right now is this giant server backend that it's building up. And you want Sony to want to work with you. You know, you can sit there and be like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, he's not attacking. Well, he is kind of it. He's making fun of the PlayStation.
Oh, totally.
And you just like.
Totally. Unprovoked attack.
Yeah. I mean, and it's the sort of thing that you say when you're behind. Like,
which
they outsell you on everything, and you're just like, oh my gosh, oh geez, okay, that's fine.
I guess, and I come back to it, like, you need to, people appreciate genuine humility and genuine honesty.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one of the big, like, people love to talk about where it's like, millennials appreciate being genuine and honesty. I'm like, dude, everybody appreciates that, okay? That's It's not special to them. I think they made it a bigger deal. They've been more vocal about it, but everybody appreciates that. And you go, this just comes off as so ingenuine.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, fine, spec for spec. Sure.
It reminds me so much of when Sony
would be number one plus one in the smartphone category.
Yeah.
Number one plus.
Exactly.
What?
It reminds me exactly of when the Sony executive, after the iPod Touch came out, and this is one of those ideas that we started the show on because we were so annoyed by it, talking about it. With the PlayStation exec, they asked him about the PS Vita, and we're like, you know, you worried about the iPod Touch? And said, no, it's a completely different category. We don't compete against that. That's, what are you talking about? And within 2 years, the PlayStation Vita was a dead platform, and the iPod Touch was a screaming success for gaming for kids.
Which, by the way, I read an interesting article where they were asking about the future of mobile gaming.
Yeah.
And there were some interesting perspectives, but I thought the one that I thought was the most accurate was, he said, look, we're talking about these kids. I mean, we're talking about, like, my daughter.
Yeah.
Right? He's like, she plays games on the iPad.
Yeah.
And she plays games on the iPhone. Like, that is her gaming platform. And they're like, this is what they're growing up with. This is what they're comfortable with. And so they're like, right now, today, it may feel less hardcore, less pro, I think is the new way everyone's saying it. We're getting away from the hardcore word, which
yeah.
I think is probably a good thing. But they say it feels less pro capable, but they're like, but A, these things are very quickly getting the power in order to do all of the same stuff. And they're like, and B, like, these are what kids are comfortable with.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the people were like, actually, no, mobile gaming is definitely the future.
Well, and if you think about it even from this context,
Nintendo's onto something.
We say Nintendo is selling crazy amounts of their Switches, and it's basically an NVIDIA Shield tablet packaged in Nintendo's, like, weird form factor that only they can pull off, sort of thing. But it's effectively, anybody can go to NVIDIA and say, we want to buy the same chipset as the Switch. We want to develop the same software capabilities supporting the same graphics engines. And we want to build our own tablet that does the same thing. Like, at this point, it is just a mobile tablet, but it's packaged the way Nintendo does it. You know, and now obviously they get a little bit of this special magic that allows them to succeed where others can't, and they're going to be able to sell a platform that people can target, and so they're going to optimize graphics for it. But if you think
about
it,
that's because they have what we've always talked about, which is key, which is content.
Yeah, they got killer apps. We'll get to their next killer app in a second. But yeah, I mean, it's just they're a screaming success they're going to succeed in that space because of that. And but the point is that the NVIDIA Shield, you know, graphics cores are really impressive. The crazy part about it is that Apple's most advanced chips compete spec for spec, which means that it's just a development issue. It's just nobody can sell a $30 game in the App Store, so nobody develops a $30 game for the App Store. Whereas
or Nintendo has this culture. They have an expectation. People know they're going to be spending $30 to $60 for a video game. So they come in. So developers develop a game worth that much. People spend that much. And you get these much bigger, you know, vast, you know, verging on pro games. And the fact that you're going to have professional tournaments where people are making money playing games on Nintendo platforms tells you, yeah, it's now a professional video game. The only thing it doesn't do is 4K. But and with all this cross-platform stuff, the fact that they're using engines like the Unreal Engine means that a developer can target the Unreal graphics engine for their game, and then based on what platform it's getting deployed to, whether it's the Nintendo Switch or a high-powered Microsoft PC, they can say, use this texture pack for, you know, do 1080 low-resolution texture packs for the Switch so it runs fast.
I love that 1080 is low-res now.
I know, right? Or do high-resolution, high, you know, texture packs in 4K for this super high-end computer. And so the developers can really run the gamut without having to build the same game multiple times. And,
right.
You know, and it's just a matter of time before, like you said, the youngest kids grow up and say, you know, I want a really I want one of these $30 games, but I don't want to buy another platform for it. Why can't I just buy it on my iPad? And it literally isn't the flip of a Switch. It's just one of these companies goes, okay, here you go. And Unreal is supported with Apple's, you know, metal backgrounds or stuff, their graphics processor. So it's like,
it's headed there. Yeah. Yeah, but for now, you know what? We still got consoles. We'll probably always have consoles.
But speaking of killer apps, so I got three that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
One that I know you'll like. So Super Mario Worlds. They went through, and this game has just gotten, like, I think this has gotten the hottest buzz of all the games at E3. Just people are like, okay, I gotta go buy a Switch now.
I continue to make the mistake of watching people play these games. So I found, I had to do, like, some exercise stuff, and I just found a 30-minute playing a game. It was in some wooded land thing. The person would just run around playing. I mean, it's Mario 64.
Yeah.
Is what it is for today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which all that means is today's graphics. The map's probably bigger. Not that Mario 64 was small, for the record. You're right. That thing was ginormous. And just looks like a ton of fun.
Yeah. One of the things that Apple does, or some of the big ideas in this game, is that Mario can throw his hat on things. Like, it's very... Mario for the last couple of generations has gotten his superpowers from different colored hats and stuff.
Yeah.
And now it's like you can throw your hat onto like a frog and you take over the frog as your main character. But I love Nintendo's, like, they wanted to add a little bit of co-op to this, but in classic Nintendo form, it's not just there's two people playing together competing. It's one person controls Mario's hat. One person controls Mario.
That's like in Mario Galaxy, where it was like, you could be the one to collect the stars.
Right, which is it's okay, but it's not a very, very active co-op, whereas this one is, it's similar in that you're just kind of a helper with the hat, but it's a very active helper. The hat can't take on damage. The hat can't die. So if you're really young and you want to play with your older sibling or your parent or whatever, you can have a hat and just mess around, and you're not going to have to worry about dying. Well, the older person can play the game, or vice versa. If you're sort of just starting and you're not really great, and your parent wants to help you out, or your friend wants to help you out, they can play as the hat. And you're just like... It's basically the helper mode, and instead of having it, Nintendo has, if you die too often in particular levels in a lot of their Mario games nowadays, you'll be allowed to get, like, become invincible and just run through the, it's always like, I always feel really, really bad when essentially what happens is you start the level, and then there's this glowing, like, box that when you hit it, a flashing tail feather falls out, and you collect it, and then you become invincible, and you can fly. You become this super-powered Mario, and it's always really embarrassing when the box shows up sparkling. You're like, I don't need it, guys. I could do it on my own. But yeah, that's how they kind of get around the whole, if the level's too difficult for somebody, they'll give you this thing to help you up. Well, this is another one of their, like, we're making sure that this is accessible to a whole gamut of different people and of different skill levels and ages and everything. You're like, that's so smart. Oh, they're so good at that. Getting kids involved. Yeah, looks really good. We have links to all these games if you want to check out the stuff yourself. The next one is the new Spider-Man game. I don't know if did you watch any videos of this, James?
No, I didn't see this one.
You are
but
going.
I bet I'll love it.
You're going to have to go check it out because it is. It looks great. One of the cool things about it is you're like this. The example that they give is you're Spider-Man and you're on this skyscraper that's being built up in New York and you're fighting bad guys and stuff. And occasionally Spider-Man will hit somebody and they'll fly off the skyscraper. But like Spider-Man's not a murderer, so they can't allow that. So the AI takes over and Spider-Man automatically shoots his web out, catches the bad guy and he hooks him to the skyscraper. So it's impossible to kill anybody in this game. Which is like,
wow.
Yeah, and they've just, and like, it's, you're in New York, so there's, you're doing the web swinging, and it just, it looks really good. They talk about how this is one of those games where they seem to understand who Spider-Man is and what his deal is, and the, you know, just, they're getting a lot better with video games and this sort of game. They talk about how it's got a bit of the feel of what's it called? Assassin's Creed, which has done a really great
job. More like sneaking around as opposed to just go beat people up.
Exactly. And so there's been a lot of games in the last couple of years that have sort of set the stage for making this game accessible and easy to understand how to play and just showing how to do it really well. And then they're going to add in the cool things that make it Spider-Man-esque, like web swinging through through New York and chasing helicopters.
That's what you want to do, man.
Exactly. Fighting bad guys and shooting webs and stuff.
So what is this going to be available on?
I think everything.
Okay.
It's one of those giant games where they really want a lot of cross-platform stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. It's just...
Is there a tie-in at all with the movie, or is it just kind of...
There's no word yet.
Okay.
On whether or not it's part of the...
It doesn't have to be. I'm just curious.
I almost hope that it doesn't, because there's a lot of... One of the issues that they run into with that is that they tend to... They don't want to...
You know, is Iron Man going to show up?
Right, yeah. Well, I hope that it fits into the bigger Marvel universe, but not necessarily the movie universe, so that they don't have to worry about, like, making sure that they somehow don't step on the toes of the rest of the movie.
Oh, okay.
And, because, it just kind of, I don't know. It looks really good, though. I'm excited about that one. That one's getting a lot of buzz. And then this one, for me in particular, is really exciting, but Skyrim, which is the Bethesda's, it's their workhorse game.
Yeah,
everybody's making fun of. One of the big jokes this year was how, in 30 years, Bethesda will be announcing that Skyrim is now working on the PlayStation 12. they just keep releasing the same game on different platforms and stuff. But to me, the cool part about this and why it's a big deal is because they've announced that this game is coming to the PlayStation VR.
Whoa.
Bethesda's doing a couple of VR stuff, but the...
She would fight dragons in VR?
Yes. But this one is in particular is going to be... This is the only one that they're announced will be coming to PlayStation 4. It's easier for them to do because it's an older game, so the graphics requirements are a little bit low.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things that I've read, it's still, they're still developing it, so it's not done yet. But one of the interesting things that I read was that the game still to this day looks amazing in just how full and vast the world looks. But they're like, when you're in VR, it's amazing how sparse the details are.
Really?
And it's, yeah. And they're like, and it just has to do with being fully, if you're looking through a small screen, a small window into the world, it just looks different. And whereas when you're in VR, you kind of have a sense of scale of everything, and you're like, oh, there's not very many trees in this world.
Interesting.
Yeah, but that won't change my mind, because if you watch the video, you get to run around with like a sword in one hand, and you're shooting flames out of your other hand, and I'm like, oh man, I want it. You talked me into it.
That's sweet.
Yeah, so those are the three games. There's a lot of other games that got announced, obviously, but those are the ones that I thought that really did the best at getting buzz going, and yeah, it's fun stuff.
That's cool, man. I still want a Switch.
I know.
I need a TV first, but I guess I don't need one, but I'd like one.
I get you.
Man, that's awesome. Very cool, very cool. E3. Man. But this year's gonna be awesome, and then we got one more because we have to pack and leave.
Yeah,
and so
we're practicing a shorter show.
Yes. So the other kind of sort of maybe big news was Amazon's gonna start eating the grocery industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
they purchased Whole Paycheck. I mean Whole Foods.
Got them.
So our sister worked for Whole Foods at one time.
Yeah.
She could almost have said she was an Amazon employee.
I know, right?
But, oh well.
I think this is a fascinating little story, because number one, they're paying $13.7 billion, so nearly the cost, or just over the cost of WhatsApp, to give you a sense of the value of WhatsApp when Facebook bought them. So the idea here is Tony Garroway, Winners and Losers, pointed out the fact that this is
Scott Galloway.
What did I just say?
Tony Galloway.
That's somebody else.
Close.
That's somebody
Scott
else.
Galloway.
Yeah, Scott Galloway. He went Winners and Losers. He was pointing out the fact that just last week that Amazon should buy these guys because they've got a tremendous amount of retail space. One of the other things that he pointed out is how basically the only person in the retail market that's really growing in the face of Amazon is Best Buy. And
really?
Yeah, and the reason why they're growing is because they're doing more and more online sales in direct competition. They're becoming, for a particular type of product, obviously okay, electronics, they are competing pretty well against Amazon, and they're using all of their retail space as essentially it's two things. It's a showroom and it's their distribution centers.
That's right.
And there's a real strength there. We talked about it last year, the idea of when Radio Shack was going under, how Amazon should buy Radio Shack and essentially do that. Use it as this giant distributed retail system where you can put your things that you need to distribute into these stores, and you can use them as showrooms. I got tons of locations all over America. They didn't do that. Whole Foods still has a great brand that they want to maintain.
Yep.
And they have a whole lot more distribution abilities because it's just a bigger buildings, bigger company. They've got distribution of...
Well, they're already doing distribution.
Right.
With food regularly.
They've got... And the thing is food's a big deal because that is something that Amazon has been moving into with their pantry. And they really want to grow into the food market. It's a big one, but it requires a lot of regionality. And on top of it, because Whole Foods are so big, you can cut out a quarter of the store and turn it into a showroom for everything else. Like the idea that in 6 months, they're not going to have at least a small section where you can walk in and look at Amazon Kindles is laughable. That will be happening. And yeah, it's just from a, And on top of it, they got kind of a deal. At, even at that incredible cost, they got a deal because Whole Foods has been talking about how they had a crisis of overconfidence that during the retail bubble that is beginning to pop, they really built out way too many stores. They've got over, they've got way over 400 stores. They've got just a few fewer retail locations than Apple does and worldwide. And they're just finding that it's hard to keep all those stores open. So Amazon's going to sit there and go, if we do what we do with distribution and we bring the Whole Foods and we turn them into distribution centers, it doesn't matter how many feet are in the stores, because really and truly, they're just stopping points to distribute food and other goods to local communities everywhere.
Okay.
This is part of their 1 hour prime, you know? They want to do 1 hour prime shipping. They want to bring that to more markets. And I think what you're going to see, my prediction is, right now Amazon's saying, we're not going to change anything in Whole Foods. Whole Foods, the CEO's staying on board. Everything stays the same.
Yeah.
Where they're going to make their big changes are all going to be in distribution for the next year. It's going to be switching over all of Whole Foods' current distribution systems are going to be brought into Amazon's super efficient, gigantic network of distribution. And they're going to marry all those things, and Amazon will just take over, quote, the back end of Whole Foods. And along with that, you'll start to see more options on Amazon.com for food and 1 hour delivery. That's the direction they're
going. Yeah, and I could see where you don't even, like, the front side of Whole Foods never changes. I mean, you talked about giving up a quarter of the store, but what if they don't even do that and they just get more efficient on the back side of the store, and it's, and that's where they're running deliveries out of it, and they turn them into mini distribution centers.
Yeah.
Where they're focusing maybe on, like, the fresh food, things that are like, no, I want this in a couple hours. I could see that. And, like, and you as a customer never actually see that, but there's a ton more traffic going out the back of the building.
Yeah, I think that's the real goal for them. I think the other piece of this is that obviously Amazon has been testing out their Amazon Go stores where they're going checkoutless. You know, it's they, or it's the most sophisticated self-checkout because they got cameras everywhere and they can,
yeah,
they're doing person tracking throughout the entire store. They know all the content. So if you don't remember, you walk in with your phone, you scan your phone, and then they use machine learning to track you throughout the store, see what you pick up. And when you walk out of the store with that item, they just charge you for it. There's no scanning. There's no nothing.
Which I heard is okay.
Yeah. Well, they're still working on it. They're, you know, there's things. But they're at this point, what they're doing is they're trying to lock it down to not 100% effective. They're trying to lock it down to financially break even. Where, yeah, they're going to miss some stuff. They're going to overcharge a few customers, and they're going to have to deal with that. But every grocery store deals with that. So just get it to the point where it doesn't cost too much to do that, where you're as good as a human is. And I think what you're going to see is eventually, maybe 5 years down the road, you're going to see them really push hard to fire all the Whole Foods employees and replace them with cameras.
Well, it's not that you fire them, you just stop hiring.
Exactly.
I imagine there's enough turnover or seasonal work that these just don't hire.
Yeah.
You don't have to fire anybody.
One of the interesting things to me with about this is that there's a bit of a culture clash, it seems to me. I know that the CEO of Whole Foods has been anti-union for years, and his argument for being anti-union is that, look, I take care of my employees. I take care of them better than they could be taken care of if we had a union, because I'm not restricted by the union. I'm not arguing with the union. I can be flexible with what my employee needs. And his employees don't try to unionize because he really takes care of them. He looks at his employees as the most valuable resource in the company. That's a huge part of the culture of Whole Foods. Now, juxtapose that to Amazon, which has notoriously terrible relationship with their engineers and with their employees, specifically their distribution centers. Their distribution centers are like, they are sweatshops. They are brutal, just, you know, continual, you know, just really run their employees ragged, replace everything with robots that can be, automate as much as they can be, make sure the humans are keeping up with robots, which is, you know, hard. It is interesting to me that you'd have those two cultures fit together. And it seems to me that the Whole Foods CEO must really feel like they're in desperate straits, because I feel like he's the sort of guy that wouldn't, I feel like he just sold the soul of Whole Foods to the devil, for lack of a better analogy. I feel like this long run for Whole Foods employees is bad news. If I were a Whole Foods employee, or if I knew somebody that was a Whole Foods employee, I would start recommending looking at Safeway.
No, you got a good 10 years before you'll even notice that.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. Amazon knows nothing about running a grocery store chain.
Okay.
There's going to be years it's going to take for them to feel comfortable enough that they understand it enough to make that type of meaningful change. I think you're going to see changes in the back end, like you said, because they already know about that. I think you'll see the distribution things happen a lot sooner than that, where you'll see delivery times dropping a ton. I think you're going to see a lot more. They'll continue with experiments like they always do, like this new wand thing that they, yeah. Magic wand. We're like, dude, that's an experiment, guys. Like, don't get like over the top with this thing. But I think it's going to be a while before they make some drastic changes with employees like that. It's such a different business.
Yeah.
And Bezos is smart enough to know. I mean, he himself goes, this is a long game. And,
yeah, that's true.
As long as they're profitable, he'll let it go for a while. They're not going to be expanding anymore is my guess, but I don't foresee.
Well,
I mean, or there will be subtle changes. You're not going to have. I wouldn't say go find a new job. No, not at all.
All right. We'll see who's right. But yeah, it does. I did read an article where they were talking about when Amazon bought Woot, and Bezos specifically said they bought Woot because they don't understand it. And he said, "You're succeeding. I don't understand why. And we can't deconstruct you and understand what it is that you're doing well without buying you." It's for like $110 million they bought Woot. And they're making, this article is making the same argument that that's what they did with Whole Foods, was this is a grocery chain that is surviving and is succeeding. And that Amazon doesn't succeed there in the same way and doesn't really understand it. And so they want to, they're buying them so that they can understand them and yeah, eventually move into it. But pretty interesting, I thought.
But, it's a lot of money to buy something you don't understand. But.
Yeah. Well, I think they understand it better than people are giving them credit for.
Well, I mean, they've learned a lot with their experimental retail space.
Yeah.
But I know that they've struggled with food delivery. But even then, that's like, it's a totally different ball game.
Yeah.
Different types of employees. You got a bunch of customer facing people now.
Yeah.
That's a different type of person. That's a different type of setup. They have this online brand thing. Now there's this offline brand thing. It's premium pricing. They don't do premium pricing. It's just, there's a ton. I would not be surprised if you eventually start to see Whole Food prices start to drop down. And it's one of those where, yeah, we improve the back end and let's pass those savings on.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like, Whole Foods is no longer a whole paycheck. You're like, wow, it's a little less than Safeway. Holy cow. It's not going to be Winco. We know that. But I don't know that, actually. It could be one day.
Yeah. And if they could somehow make the argument that we've managed to keep, like, the Whole Foods, like, healthy living vibe while maintaining cheap prices because of increased distribution capabilities, like, that would be pretty impressive. And I think would go over well with a huge part of this, of society, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's one of those where I think Bezos and team, because it's not just him, they have a very clear, what I would call a quick win.
Yeah.
Here's how we can add value right away, either to Amazon or to Whole Foods, and probably a combination of the two, to justify the price tag. Synergy. Plus, their stock is rising like crazy, so if there was a time to do it, this is the time.
Yeah.
Because they can ride, you know, they can ride that coattail, and they don't have to justify it.
Yeah, which exactly. Is nice.
And so I think, like I said, they've got a very clear path of like, here's how we at least break even, if not make a little bit of money, which is cool. Worst case scenario, we close all the stores and sell all the space and, you know, we get it back. But I also think they're like, because I know this is how Bezos works, where he's like, we've got like 30 ideas for different experiments and things that we want to try, and we don't know what's going to stick, and we're okay with that. And we're going to see what happens.
Yeah.
And they don't even fully know that long-term direction. You know, do you eventually shut down the front-facing side of it and turn it into a full distribution center? Like, maybe.
Yeah.
We're not think so, but maybe. Do you go into, like, these are now more general purpose types of stores and we're getting out of food? Do we stay high-end or do we compete with Winco's all now? Is it just grocery stores? You know, I think for that stuff, they have no idea. I think they could sit there and say, you know, we still might be an employee-run business. I know a lot of companies, they had call centers, and then they realized the cost savings of not having a call center, and they got rid of them. And now they're coming back saying, you know what? People really appreciate being able to talk to a live person. Yeah. Call centers are a thing. I mean, that was Apple. They listed that as a core competency. Like, dude, you can call our call centers. They speak English. They're intelligent. They'll actually be able to help you. And you know what? People appreciate that.
Yeah.
And who knows? Bezos, one of the things they might find is like, yeah, you know, we got rid of the checkout, but that's because we want everybody roaming the stores.
Right.
And we want you helping. We have the exact same number of employees. Now it's just when you get lost, you're not like, let me try to flag some down. Have you ever been inside of a Home Depot trying to flag somebody down?
That's impossible.
That's a joke. It's a joke. The only time is if you go at like 6 in the morning. Then they got employees everywhere, and right. They're all contractors who know what they're doing, who don't need help. It's like the total thing. But if you get someone like me, where I like to go shopping at 8 or 9 o'clock at night after I did a project and I'm getting materials for the next day,
yeah.
Then it's like no one's around, and the people who work there have no idea what's going on.
Terrible,
they're like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, let me read this label with you. Like, dude, I can read a label. That's not what I'm asking
for.
Yeah,
what is this? Fry's Electronics? Come on.
Yeah, so I, you know, and so I could see where they go that route. And. Yeah. But I think Bezos is genuinely like, I don't know. Maybe they're going to have little drone helicopter pads on all of the roofs.
Yes.
Like, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I agree.
What if it's drone to store and then they drive it to your home? Mm. Right? It's like, maybe.
Yeah, I could see. You know what? I tend to agree with you. I'm postulating that they'll do the X, Y, and Z, but I think the bigger reality is they're like, yeah, we will try X, Y, and Z, and we'll see how it works. And we're also going to try A through X. Don't worry, we're going to try everything.
Yeah.
We've got 450 stores around the world. We're going to experiment a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to do one thing at this store. Yeah. We're gonna have 450 experiments going at any one time.
Yeah.
You know, and if this one works, it's very quickly going to roll out to everybody.
Right.
And, because that's how they do it. So, but I think they know what the next three steps are.
Yeah.
And
it's all back. I guarantee that's all back in distribution.
Totally.
You know.
Yeah. 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 And they've got some interesting ideas for the front end. And, yeah.
Cool, man. I like it.
See how it goes. Maybe they go the route of, I like the ones where, like, you get one choice. You know, and so it's like these super convenience stores. They're like, there's one brand of tissues. They're Amazon Essentials, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And there's one type of cough medicine, and there's one type of paper plate, and, like, there's one type of milk. Like, there's stores where, like, yeah, we carry everything. One brand.
Right.
That's it. And that's it. And so they fit in like a 7-Eleven footprint.
Right.
Or a Starbucks footprint, but they have the same coverage as a Safeway.
Right.
And they're just like, yeah, you did one bread. Like that's your choice.
Yeah. And like you said, especially if they're the staples and they're Amazon essentials, so they're cheap, that'd be pretty.
Yeah. And so I could see where that's how they suddenly sit there and say, we're able to shrink down the store some to make more room for distribution. But it was because we way whittled down what your product choices are. And I could see, too, where it's like, well, okay, maybe for food stuff, we'll stay the organic premium realm.
Yeah.
But for everything else that's not that, we're going Amazon Essentials.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't, I don't know, maybe it's important that you have locally sourced loving
bison.
Well, I was thinking locally sourced paper plates, but
oh, okay.
They were lovingly chopped down trees or something. I don't know. Maybe that's important. Maybe
what's the name of this tree?
100% recycled. Maybe that's more important than local organic.
Paper. Portland.
Yeah. Anyways, it'll be interesting to watch. We obviously, like you said, we're going to have years to see how this develops.
Yeah.
That may or may not be obvious. All right. That's the show. That's what we got. That's what happened. It was good. Thank you for joining us, and thanks so much for listening to episode... What are we at? 299? Crazy. We really appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes and all the links at furloughbros.com, and you can get those show notes sent directly to you by signing up for email. And finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. So if you'd also like to contribute, we've got a website, Furlough Bros. Check it out. You can learn more. And also, as a heads-up warning, after episode 300, which is next week, we're going to take a little bit of a break here. We're going to enjoy our summer. We've been going nonstop for 300 weeks. And, we're gonna take some time off, hang out with family, and more importantly, we're going to... do some reevaluation of the show itself. So this obviously was a little bit shorter than our normal show length. It's only an hour and a half. What would it look like if it was even a third of that length is one of the questions we're going to ask. So what if it was more of a 20 to 30 minute show? So if you've made it this far, clearly you like us and you enjoy listening and we appreciate that. We actually wouldn't mind your feedback. You can either hit us up on Twitter or via email or wherever, ton of different sources. Give us your feedback. Like, what do you love about the show? Would you like us to keep? What would you be okay if we dropped? And, because clearly we're going to make some tough decisions on format choices. So, we'll talk more about that in the next episode as well, but just kind of wanted to give you a heads up that next week will be our last super full show for a little bit, and then we'll be back. All right, with that, I am James Furlough, and my tough and muddy brother is Matthew Furlough, and so we will talk next time. Thank you.